What's that?
Is that Sandy's phone?
Yeah, it is Sandy's phone, because I'm going to use my phone to play some files later, so I couldn't do both.
I thought it was an interesting choice for a second.
Yeah. Father, thank you for this time to be here this morning and for this discussion, and I just pray that it would be profitable, that it would be honoring to you, and that we might bring glory to your name in all that we say and do. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. You have to pardon my voice this morning. We had construction going on at the house, and I think it's gotten to me a little bit.
You need to buy better construction workers.
Yeah, right.
You don't have to yell at them all the time.
Or better construction dust or something. I don't know. All right, we've been looking at, just for those who haven't been here or those who have slept since then, I think that covers most of us. Been looking at giving in the New Covenant. That's kind of an outgrowth of tithing and not tithing. And we've been talking about who we give to in the New Covenant, and we have mentioned several categories. We've mentioned pastors and elders. We've mentioned ministers of the gospel. And we've been focusing on the poor, and we're going to focus on them some more this morning. But even though we're focusing on the poor, don't forget the other categories are still there. You know, we don't want to get lost in where we are. And then we'll have some other categories later, I hope. So, in giving to the poor, we began by looking at the scriptures that show we have a biblical duty to give to the poor, and there's quite a few of them. We spent a whole class on that. And then last week, we began to explore questions about giving to the poor and an attempt to give a little bit of a balance to always give to the poor, always give to the poor. We asked questions like, is it ever wrong or a bad idea to give to someone who's poor or in financial need? Are there limits to what we should give to the poor? If so, what are they? And this week, I hope we'll get to this idea, first of all, the given, that even if we gave away all of our money, we couldn't help everyone. So how do we go about prioritizing who we do help? And as far as limits last week, just a brief review of that. We started off looking at 2 Thessalonians 3, where the Apostle Paul teaches that it's wrong, and I suggested that it's unloving as well, to give anything, even food, to someone who is able but unwilling to provide for their own need. And we had quite a bit of discussion about that. And then we look at four practical considerations we should take into account before helping the poor with a, especially in terms of relief. And this came from a book that I've recommended called When Helping Hurts, how to alleviate poverty without hurting the poor and yourself. And it's an unusual book in that I've read many books on Christian giving and giving to the poor, and you know, there's always the press to say, yeah, you know, we need to do this. This is important. Let's do it. One thing this book does, it does that, but it also says, but be careful how you give, because sometimes you can hurt people by giving to them in the wrong way. In fact, quite often you can. And so I've never seen a book that gave that much emphasis to that idea. And I think it's helpful. I think it's much needed in our society today. So I've kind of given it some emphasis. So some of the principles we looked at last week are some questions that you want to ask. Like, is there really a crisis at hand? So the example we gave last week, you're looking at the apparently well-fed homeless guy begging, saying he needs, you know, money for food. Is it a crisis if you don't help him right then? Is he going to starve to death and drop right then? Or is there time for him to do something about his own situation? And one of the presumptions of this book is, as we'll see, is that people should first make an effort to help themselves. And I think it's in keeping with the principle the Apostle Paul says, if you're able, you should be working for yourself. You shouldn't depend on other people unless you can't help yourself. And then you depend on other people. And if it's not a crisis and they can do something, then there's time. You don't have to rush and give them something right away. And then he asked, to what degree was the individual person responsible for the crisis that they find themselves in? And he warned us, you know, don't be heartless in this, you know. But at the same time, if you don't make the person recognize their role in getting themselves where they are, then they're going to keep going back to that place. They need to feel their part in what they did, and not just to punish them or, you know, make them feel guilty, but to get them to recognize they need to change. They need to do something different. And if you don't help them with that, they're just going to be in that cycle. They're not coming out of it. And that's unloving on our part. And he asked the question, can the person help themselves? Quite often they can. And the writer of this book argues, if they can help themselves, then we don't need to be providing them with relief. They need to be helping themselves. And then he says, you know, to what extent has this person already been receiving relief or from you or others in the past? Because the chances are, if he's in this perpetual habit of getting relief, getting relief, getting relief, getting relief, you're just going to be one more stop along the way. And you're not helping him. And, you know, it's like last week, I think it came up about, you know, I think Joe Dubop's situation where a guy wouldn't even allow him to the restaurant because he'd been there begging so many doggone times. And, of course, you went in and got him in. But thing is, what's going to happen tomorrow? He's going back. And what's going to happen the day after that? He's going back. We're not helping him. So that's kind of the point the book makes. So that's all what we looked at last week. A lot of good and vigorous discussion about these issues. A lot of balance to be had in all this. I recognize all that. And we can have more this week as well. Anybody want to add to that? Or I think we, I don't know if we finished our discussion last week or not, but if you wanted to throw something in at this point, you could. If not, I've got other things to cover, so I'm fine either way. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll move on. So I want to look a little bit at priorities in giving. As I read Scripture, our greatest obligation in giving to those in need, our greatest obligation is to provide for our family, I would say particularly our immediate family, and I would say those in need should look first to their families for help. So family first when it comes to help. And I think the Bible communicates that idea, especially there's a section in 1 Timothy chapter 5. Again, I apologize for my voice and scratchiness here this morning. We'll keep plugging ahead. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, Paul says to Timothy in 1 Timothy 5:8, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, especially for members of his household, i.e. immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Now, that's one of the strongest statements you could make. It's one thing to say you're not a very good Christian for not giving. It's another thing to say you've denied the faith and you're worse than, you're not even like an unbeliever, you're worse than an unbeliever. Even unbelievers take care of their family, or they typically should or could or will. A Christian who won't do that has really missed the boat. And a little later in the passage, it says, interesting, if there's any believing woman who has relatives who are widows, and again, presumed in that society was the fact that widows, especially those who were aged and failing in health, would be unable to care for themselves. They would be dependent on others. A believing woman who has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Let the church not be burdened. So while you normally think of a church as having a responsibility, and Paul very carefully delineates the responsibilities of what a true widow is, he talks about those who are truly widows in that particular culture and environment in particular. excuse me. The church should not be burdened with that if there are family members who could carry the load. The family members should be looked to first, especially if they're believers. But I think there's another verse I didn't quote it here, but that implied whether they're believers or not. I mean, just their kids should take care of their parents. And then the church should look to that to happen first before they have to pick up the burden. So that's one idea. Another idea, the command to help the poor is an extension, I believe, of the command to love our neighbor. You stop and think about it. Helping the poor is a way of loving your neighbor. It's a particular kind of neighbor and a particular kind of help, but it's just a narrower sliver of a bigger pie, if you will. And so therefore, it applies to anyone who has a need, even our enemy. We saw in Romans 12, you know, if your enemy is hungry or thirsty, you should feed them. So we would say that anyone who is in need is a candidate for our help. However, the scriptures do seem to suggest that we should be especially concerned with looking after the needs of fellow believers. So there is a little bit of prioritization, I think, that can go on here. So we look at priority one, your immediate physical family, maybe a little bit of extended family. Priority two, you might say your spiritual family, fellow Christians. And I get that from like Galatians 6, the general principle. It says, so that if we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone. So it's not like only do good to certain people. Do good to everyone, but especially those who are the household of faith, i.e. fellow Christians. So there's a priority. If it comes down to a choice between helping a Christian and helping a non-Christian, it would seem that helping the Christian, all other things being equal, would be your choice. Of course, rarely are all other things equal, but still, when it comes down to it, that should be a priority that you should factor in. And many of the passages that I quoted to you, I named the what I call the big three, which hit the hardest at us on the importance of giving to those in need, all focus on believers in need. Again, that's not to say you don't help unbelievers. There are many passages that suggest that as well. But in particular, Matthew 25, the sheep and goats passage, Jesus talked about, whenever you did this to the least of my brothers, you did it to me. He's talking about believers. Or James, when he talks about, you know, faith, genuine faith will have accompanying it good work. He gives an example of helping a brother or sister who's poorly clothed or lacking in food. And then John, in 1 John, says, if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need. So again, there's a big emphasis on helping believers in the scriptures. So I see that, you know, in terms of priorities, immediate family, then spiritual family would be your, you could almost look at it like concentric circles in a sense. And then I introduce another idea here. This is a little more based on thinking through a logic. Excuse me again. It seems to me that we should, well, I didn't word that right, did I? It seems to me that it should be a higher priority to help people with whom we are able to have ongoing personal interaction than to help those with whom we are unable to have much contact. I'm not saying you don't help people with whom you don't have much contact, but it seems like if there's a priority to be had, you would want to focus on people you have more of a relationship with, more connection with, more understanding of your situation. And I ask the question, why do you think I would say that? So give me a relief from talking here. Well, would you like to guess why I would think that? Anybody?
I'd say a couple things. There's accountability. You know, I'm giving you this, and you're going to see me again, so you're probably going to be careful about how much you're asking for money, or hopefully you're going to be trying to use that money to help you actually get back on your feet. Another thing is it could be more of an extension of you could give the money and also say, I can help you with getting
money. Yeah. Yeah, all those are good ideas that I had in mind with that. It's very difficult to help somebody remotely. You don't really know. First of all, you don't really know if they're really a person in genuine need. So you're already in a little bit of an iffy situation. And remotely could mean a guy walks up to you you know nothing about, and he's telling you a story. And many of us have had the experience of trying to help those people, and even the most minute digging into the situation will turn up a lot of lies in what they're telling you oftentimes. I could tell you stories about that. I just start asking them questions. You know, next thing you know, it's like, whoa, 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 never mind, I don't want help. What happened? You know, because I pursued what they told me. But if you know somebody, you're involved with them, you can understand that they really do have a genuine need. And as Stephen says, often you need more than just money. There's a lot that goes into helping people, not just handing them cash. I mean, that may be part of the picture, obviously. But it could just be showing them things, talking to them, encouraging them. And those are all things that involve having a relationship. So I tend myself to want to prioritize those kinds of opportunities as opposed to others. Again, I can't make it exclusive. And sometimes it can be you know somebody through somebody, like the obvious New Testament example is the Apostle Paul taking up a collection for the Jews and the poor saints in Jerusalem from the Gentile churches who may not have had personal contact with those with those saints, but on Paul's word, you know, are going to give a large contribution. And you may have situations like that where you give. You know, Curtis Thomas comes and talks about needs in Burma. We don't know those people, but we know Curtis, and he gives us a report, and you know, we can put that together. And you have a relationship in that way. So I raise something else that I think could factor in. Now we're getting into a little bit more and more iffy area. I started with kind of like the really obvious, clear scriptural thing. Now I'm going to get into fuzzier areas and float them out there because they're things we all think about, so, or at least we should. We live in a society where there are numerous, that should be A-R-E. I'm seeing all my spelling errors up here now that I'm standing in front of you. We live in a society where there are numerous safety nets in place to a point where there is really no reason why almost anyone in our society should have to be without basic necessities. I mean, that's really true. Let's just start with the government. First of all, federal, state, local. There's layer upon layer of help available. All of us, in a sense, all of us are forced to give to the poor through our taxes already. And there are systems in place of welfare and unemployment and Social Security and Medicare, and the list goes on and on and on. All systems that were not in place at the time the New Testament was written, or in any other country in the world that I know of in earlier years. This is kind of a recent innovation. That's not to say it's good or bad. I have a lot of opinions about all that, but just whether it's good or bad, it is. So, knowing this, I ask the question, should the existence of these safety nets affect how or even if we go about helping local people who are poor, and if so, how? Again, saving my voice, and I'm expecting a discussion on this anyway, so y'all start. Should this even be a factor? I can see a purist saying, doesn't matter. We still have to help them. But really, does it not matter? Does it factor in? Should it factor in? If so, how?
Well, I think in that situation, you would say, okay.
Okay, get closer.
So maybe you don't have access to a car to get you to the unemployment office. I'll take you to the unemployment office.
Okay.
And help you get set up there, or, you know, whatever. So that could be a way of dealing with that situation to help them be able to get the things that they need without sacrificing too much, I guess.
Or well, without you having to personally necessarily take on the whole burden.
Right.
Martin, you and I had a discussion after class last time. I mentioned I might get you to share a little bit. Martin used to work for the Union Rescue Mission, was it? Years ago. And there's another organization. That's not a governmental organization. That's a private organization that does a lot. And I think they're still out there doing the stuff that they do. I don't know. I haven't kept up with them. But you want to talk about what they did? And just because some of you have mentioned situations, this could be a resource you could use. You don't have to take it all on yourself. You can't really take it on yourself. Whereas an organization that's equipped to do this, you could direct people and it could be helpful. So it's another thought. Go ahead, Martin.
Well, I think one of the things that I learned when I worked for them, which I didn't know the other time, there are incredible resources for the very things we're talking about. It seems like it always comes up during the time when it's really cold. When it's really cold, just to give you an example, we worked a lot with Salvation Army. They're probably the biggest They're well known for a number of things. They're well known for their soup kitchens. They also have ability to take care of the donations that they get, just like the Union Rescue Mission did. They had ability to provide clothing, those kinds of things as well. Now, during this time of year, the Union Rescue Mission was really good about being willing to come get anybody that wanted need, that had need for clothing or shelter for the night or food. And they tried to get that throughout the communities, and one of the ways they did that is through us that work for them. Their view was that you run across the person that meets you at Walmart for the hamburger, all you have to do is ask them one question, and that is, would they be willing for you to take them someplace to get the needs met that they have? If the answer is no, don't call them. If the answer is sure, then you can call them. They'll come get them, and they'll take them down. They provided that service while it was cold like this. Matter of fact, there were times they went out, they tried to get the people under the bridges, all those kinds of things to come in out of the cold. Most of those under the bridges that were at home, they weren't interested. They were fine just the way they were. But the others, there's all kinds of hope. And we partnered with Salvation Army a lot. And we'd go back and forth between meeting those kinds of needs, especially during the cold times of the year. So there's lots of help out there you can get your hands on. Most people don't know that. But it's there. All you have to do is call them, ask them what their resources are, get the numbers for them. Had all that at one time. That was years ago. So yeah, I'm sure it's still out there. They're still around. So I doubt that they've changed much.
As I recall from, not just only you working there, but I knew Paul Stevens, I think, was working at the time. That's maybe how you got involved. I don't remember, but a mutual friend of ours back then. there's a lot of accountability that those that they provide. So they don't just feed them and just let things keep going on. They start trying to work with them to figure out, okay, how can we get you in a home? How can we get you in a job? How can we make you stable? How can you get out of your situation? How can you get off drugs? Yeah. I think, don't they drug test them or stuff? I don't remember if they do or not. They don't let them stay there for on drugs. I know that.
True. They won't. And they might at first, depending on why you were there. If it was for drug abuse, they would. So they could keep up with progress. If they think you're still on them, they won't let you stay. If you give them no reason to. I mean, they're just hungry or whatever. There's no reason to drug test them. They won't until they see the signs show up. And when they do, then they'll test them. But they do that too. It's all about the accountability. So, yeah, they do that too. And they do have extended stay programs. They have learning programs. They have all kinds of things. And then they pair you with other government things too, just like you brought up.
Right.
They pair them for those and get them prepared for those, if they will spend the time in order to prepare to do that. So there's all kinds of help. And that's year-round, not just the types of things I talked about while it was cold. Those types of things are year-round. So even in the summertime, guy needs a hamburger. If he's serious, he can go through this and end up with a job. But most of them that I've known, they're not interested.
So, I mean, to me, this is a resource like, you asked last week, well, hey, I'm out there at Walmart. It's cold, man. These guys are cold. What do I do? You don't want to be heartless.
Yeah.
Maybe this is an option where instead of you just doing something where they're going to be back at it tomorrow or next week or next month, they have a chance to go. Now, they may still not take advantage of the opportunity. A lot of times that's why they're where they are. And you can't help somebody who's not going to be willing to help themselves over time. So,
and by the way, some of those people in the program, there were a number of them that had master's degrees.
Oh, yeah.
They're not idiots. A lot of them are there because of situations that they created.
Well, and one of the things that Paul told me about about the homeless population, that which is what they dealt with, he said, when you think of the homeless population, what do you think percentage-wise they're made up of? And most of us are picturing the guy lost his job and he's thrown out on the street. That's kind of what comes to our head. He said, that's not how it plays out. He said, there may be that category of people, although typically most people who lose their job, I've lost my job and I didn't get thrown out on the street, and we will find ways to get with people or get help or whatever. But he said the majority, and this is his reporting, I'm just telling you what he told me, were people who they enjoy not having responsibility of having a home, having commitments. It's like the old, back in the day when the guys used to travel on the railroads, There's all those old hobo songs I used to sing back when I sang the old country songs. They like, there's a romantic attraction to that style of life for them. Now, to me, that's like an anathema. I would never want to live like that. But there are people that attracts them. I don't think that's good for them. But if that's where they're at and they like it, you know, you're not going to get them off of that until you change their mindset somehow. And that's part of what the Union Rescue Mission tried to do. There were other different reasons and causes that you wouldn't think of. Mental health was another one. Because there's been a lot of changes in recent years. It used to be that people with mental health issues were sort of institutionalized and shoved off somewhere. And now they consider that bad, and maybe in some ways it was. And so now they're just kind of pushed out on the street. But you got people who are mentally aren't able to get there. Those people need special help. And they're not easy to deal with. I've been involved in helping people whom I didn't give them a test, but I could tell you that there was something mentally missing there once we got involved. And no matter how much you would tell them something, they didn't get it. You know, how are you going to help somebody like that? It's a little bit tough. It becomes challenging. And they were equipped to do all that. So it's something I think worth keeping in mind. if you have compassion, and we're supposed to, we ought to, maybe think about a different strategy for helping people. It's going to take some involvement. It's going to take you making a phone call, waiting for somebody to show up, asking questions. You know, and honestly, there are times when, you know, we're busy traveling from here to there. I see at least one or two homeless people, presumably on a street corner, on my way to work every day. I am not going to be able to stop and talk to those people and be late for work. I'll lose my job, and then I'll be out there. I wouldn't be there. You know, so I don't feel guilty about not stopping my car and getting out, you know, in the middle of the traffic and say, are you okay? Can I help you? You know, or why are you here? And have you called the Union Rescue Mission? You know, I'm not going to do that. Maybe you would say, I feel like we should always do that. Well, do it then. But I'm just telling you that those are kind of decisions we have to weigh up and think about in terms of what we're doing. Any other discussion on that before we...
Another thing that I've read just to balance out the sort of correlation that you said you got from Paul, I've read, and it's been a long time, so I don't know the numbers, but we tend to think of the people who are homeless or go through a homeless shelter as the perpetually homeless person that, you know, you see them like years later, you know, they look the same and all that. But that tends to be, from what I've read, the smaller percentage. A lot of people go through a homeless shelter and it's, you know, they've just gotten a bad spot. They're there for a week or a month or, you know, a short period of time. And they, you know, they obviously, it could be that they got into that situation, you know, because of things that they've done or, you know, things that they didn't do. That's probably true. But they do end up working their way out of it. So I do like the Union Rescue Mission option of being able to present people with that opportunity.
Yeah.
So like you said, you can't do it every time, but if you've got, you know, if you're like, well, I've got 5 minutes to spare, you know, it's not a bad idea to keep that information with you so that you're ready for it.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about it. If they work the program, it does work. It just reminded me of a guy I knew was in the drug program years ago, you know, and I attended the meeting with him, and one of their slogans was, it only works if you work it. You know, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, any of these kind of things, and this is another kind of an issue where people have to go through a period of change, and they have to work at it. If they're not willing to work at it, they're gonna stay where they are, and they need to feel the pain of where they are. So that there's pressure on them, natural pressure for them to move out of that. That's the loving thing to do. That's what God has put in place providentially for them, and we don't want to interfere with that.
Another family that we're aware of through other people, but they were homeless, and the church that they were that they got involved with for a little while helped them find a trailer to live in and things like that. And kind of help them kind of get off the street and find a job, but they perpetually keep looking for, you know, those better opportunities and just say, oh, well, we're not being taken care of the way we should be taken care of, so we're going to go over and move to Michigan. So they move to Michigan for like a month, and they're like, oh, this is terrible. So then they move back, and then they ask for help again.
Yeah, like, yeah.
We need you to do all this stuff for us. And so finally, the person that we know that's been working with them said, well, there's this place called Our House, and they'll take you in, they'll help you train for jobs, they'll help you get a house in a better situation and kind of move you through the process. The only caveat is you have to be willing to not live in the same unit as your husband for a couple months until one opens up. And they were like, absolutely not, we will not do that. So they're still in the same situation because they are absolutely refusing a few months of pain to get them to a better situation. Yeah. But Our House is another opportunity for people to
Okay. Well, let me float. I mean, there's so much. It's hard for me to know where to stop on this. I think we could spend the next 5 months on this if we wanted to, and I'm not sure that I want to do that. But one more thing I want to throw out there for our consideration. Which is better? And I don't have a definite answer for this question. I'm just posing it. And it kind of relates to a principle I gave you earlier, a couple principles. Is it better to help a person with serious needs, i.e. food and clothing, who lives in another country where there are no safety nets or legal protection, or help a local person who is struggling financially with genuine needs that are less serious, like helping them repair a car, buy a water heater, purchase a Bible or a good commentary, take a much-needed getaway as a couple if we wanted to really get, you know, you could say, oh, wow. But that's helping somebody maybe who can't afford to do something that has a need. It's not, obviously, as high-level need as starving to death. But it is a need. It is part of loving your neighbor. I consider these all ways, in a way, of helping the poor. Now, if you want to get real strict about it, you know, it seems like the Bible, when it talks about the poor, is usually looking at serious needs. But, again, financial levels vary and needs vary. So the advantage of point two is you are, it's somebody close by and you can get involved. And that was something that I said I try to prioritize. We talked about that. But the advantage of A is you're helping somebody who has a genuine, really serious need in a place where there are no safety nets. And they may genuinely be starving to death. And they may be even a Christian. So something to think about in terms of those two things. I have something I want to play for you. As we're running short on time, maybe we can mix it with this question because he kind of addresses it. I've mentioned to you all that I've, excuse me again, been talking to my son Jason, who's over in Lebanon. So we communicate through WhatsApp, and we make these little audio files for each other, you know, like 2, 3, 5 minutes at a time, sometimes 10. And we record a kind of a soliloquy, maybe a series of messages. And then, you know, the other guy listens to them, and then they make a series of recordings back. This is how we talk without actually getting on the phone or without texting out, typing out a text message. So we have been having this ongoing theological discussion that way predated me even thinking about having this class, and we're still having it, on this very topic, the providence of God. And so I thought I'd just play for you a little snippet or two from some of what Jason has to say, because the reason for that is it's another person's perspective. And I've told you before, I am not the guy that's going to hold myself up as an example as the great giver. I'm just not there. Jason would come close, though he doesn't see himself that way necessarily either. But he has I think you'll hear he has a real heart for it. And listening to his perspective might be helpful. So I just thought, I got about, it's less than 10 minutes worth of stuff from him. I hope we'll benefit from hearing it. So let me give us a try here. And I have to play little parts of snippets, so bear with me on, because otherwise I'd be playing them for 30 minutes here, because he wasn't trying to be concise. And by the way, he did not do this for your consumption. He did this for me. He had no idea when he recorded this it was going to be heard by anybody else. I did ask his permission, and he was fine with that. He said, yeah, sure. So just so you know, this is him to me. It's actually part of a private conversation between two of us.
I'll tell you, I'll bring in a concept here that I hope is helpful. This is part of how I view things. I don't think it's going to like settle disputes between us, but hopefully it'll still is. Not that we have disputes. But anyway, civil disagreements, whatever, different perspectives. But hopefully at least angry for my perspective. I think of you because, again, especially now, we have some common language, I hope, because I am viewing things much more these days in my life over the past several years now, through the lens of rewards, I view my life now and everything I'm doing now more in terms of investment than just toil or labor or meaninglessness or whatever else you could think of, or just like a test or trial you have to get through. Although some of those are valid word pictures and valid ideas, not the meaningless one probably, but toil and tests and trials and things you have to endure and stuff like that. But I think there's also a big part of the way I view my life is investment. And so, again, across the board, money, time, energy, talent, whatever. So since I think about investment, and I know you and I have talked a lot about investments as well, although, again, I'm sure the analogies break down here at some point, I think of what I'm doing with my life and what I'm doing for the Lord as an investment portfolio. And, again, the analogy will break down here at some point. But if we look at, like, that one, I'm blanking on his name right now, but, you know, the guy we both like, we look at what he talks about being invested across multiple kinds of investments, and that's a wiser or better investment, a way to do investments. So I know that's a money thing for retirement, and that's something separate than what we're talking about with the Lord. But I see some similarities there that I want to invest across portfolio. I want to have an investment portfolio that's invested in different sectors or different, I forget what you call it, classes, investment classes. There you go. And even within those classes, I'll have different funds if you want. So, for example, I've had the class of giving towards the church. That's a clear one in my mind. Yeah, you need to give to the church. Okay, great. Another one for me is giving towards missions. So I really believe in giving towards missions. So within missions, I have different funds, quote unquote, within that investment class. I have different people I support, different organizations even, stuff like that. What I was missing for a long time, what I consider now to be missing, what I consider now as at that time was missing, as I'm trying to say, was giving to the poor. Okay, it's getting a little long. I'll start the message. Last one. Anyway, I mean, keep going on these, but some of them may be more path-seeming than others. I mean, there's some general ones like Matthew 5, give to everyone who asks.
Oh, wait. Wrong one here.
Sorry, my finger slipped on that last one. Anyway, I mean, keep going on these, but some of them may be...
Okay, hang on. This is not where I wanted to be.
Sorry, my finger slipped up that last one.
That's not what I want to be doing. Let's see here. Okay, next step. Okay, that's 654. And sorry about this. I tried to plan this ahead of time, and it's not. I think it's the next one.
Sorry, my finger slipped on that last one. anyway, I mean, keep going on these, but some of them may be more path-seeming than others. And there's some general ones like Matthew 5, give to everyone who asks. Luke 6, lend without it.
No,
sorry,
I'm sorry. Wait, here we go. Maybe it's this one.
Okay, so again, I think you've heard some of this, but we'll just kind of tie it back together with what I'm saying now.
Okay, this is it. Sorry.
In recent years, I've read more about giving to the poor and what the Bible has to say about that, and realized some things I didn't realize before, which again, from my perspective, is I believe that God is telling me I need to give to the poor at some level, and not only the level at which you've talked about with the big three passages, but other levels as well. That's my current conviction. So I've started a new investment class of giving to the poor. And within that class, if you want, maybe subclasses, I don't know, where all this analogy breaks down. But I've mentioned to you about what I think are helpful ways to give to the poor. And I try to give to the poor in helpful ways as much as possible. However, sometimes with the path issue, I give to people in my path, even if I can't tell exactly how helpful it is. So that's kind of how I currently do it. So we're taking it from this kind of abstract realm of like, what should we do? What's the Bible saying today? Like, what am I practically doing now? How am I trying to live this out? So relief or emergency giving of just like, hey, give a hungry man a sandwich or something is usually my smallest category. And it's because I have the least amount of confidence that I'm doing good with that. From like, you know, when helping hurts and other such similar materials. that I've looked at and stuff. So I think that's helpful, that's good, and it's mentioned in Scripture specifically. That's one reason I still try and do it here and there. I try and keep it in my investment portfolio. But that's how I kind of view it now. I guess the question is, how do I deal with limited resources, finite resources? And one way you could deal with it is just say, for example, I'm stepping outside the conversation here for a second. One way you could deal with that is to say, well, I can't do everything, so I'm just going to do a handful of things. Or I can't do everything, so I'm just going to do what I'm passionate about. Which I would understand why people would have that approach. And I'm not saying that's exactly your approach. I think to some extent you're saying things like that, but I don't think that's the whole story with you. I know you do things beyond that too. But for me, if I see it as a command in Scripture, which currently I'm convinced that I do, then I want to have it in my investment portfolio at some level, because as far as I can know right now, God's saying it's a priority of some kind. It may not be my ultimate priority, certainly not going to be my only priority, because there's many, but it needs to be in the portfolio list, if that makes sense. Okay. So anyway, back in the poverty giving, so I didn't used to do that. Even now, I don't do a lot with relief and stuff, because I have the hardest time finding good ways to do that, although Open Doors may be a way to do that, which is one reason that I want to make sure I get that money to them. But I see development and justice type giving to the poor as two other realms, which I mentioned to you in the past. My largest by far right now is development.
Okay, and then one last little thing here. It's about less than 2 minutes.
Sorry, I apologize. Anyway, I hope that makes sense to actually hear some of the things I'm actually doing and why with our money. And I think the more I give, because, okay, here's another part of the deal. Jesus says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And maybe you think this is silly, but I've heard some people say that you can actually move your heart on some issues by placing your treasure there. I think that lines up with what Jesus is saying. I don't think it has to be the only way you can understand what he's saying, but I think it is a way you can understand what he's saying in that passage. And so part of why I give is to move my heart towards caring about the poor, and towards caring about missions, and towards caring about my church. It's part of why I give to those things. So I think that's yet another reason to do it. I say, oh yeah. So as I do that, I do get more interested, I do gain more passion, and I tend to read more stories, you know. So I gave to Voice of Mars, I tend to go on their website and look at stuff and be like, oh, this is what they're doing, that's pretty cool. Or Opportunity International, same thing. Or if I'm giving to, I don't know, something specific, which I don't have in mind right now. Let's say I'm giving to help people in Thailand, and then I find out that there's a tsunami there or something. I care more about what's happening in Thailand because I'm giving to it. And I'm like, oh, shoot, there's a, you know, or like you in Nepal, maybe, let's say, or Burma. I can't remember. I always get mixed up which countries, which are Open Door International. And you find out there's an earthquake there or a famine or something. You're like, oh, shoot, you know, I've been giving to those people. And you care a little more. And if you give more, you probably care more still. So I think that's a general principle, a heart principle. All right, Uga.
That's our pet name for each other, Uga. Anyhow, don't ask me to explain that. I have no idea how I got started, but anyhow. There's a little snippet of somebody who, you know, you can hear he's pretty serious about this. He's thinking through it, and, you know, I appreciate his heart. We're still working out, seeing eye to eye on all of it. And we're not having a major disagreement, like you said. It's just iron sharpening iron kind of a thing. And I'm glad to be able to have that with him. So anyhow, thoughts? We're about out of time, but I wanted to kind of get all that in. And any responses to, again, somebody who has a little more rubber meets the road involvement in that? Maybe that helps you. I think it's kind of convicting, don't you? I mean, are we all thinking like that? I don't know. I'm getting there.
What's helpful is the continued encouragement to think it through and not just blow it off and act on the hip when all of a sudden somebody's on the street in your face wanting to shake your hand and say, hey, man, you got a dollar, you got a quarter.
Yeah.
Really? What are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
And, you know, for me personally, you know, it's one of those things where I'm trying to get past this. I want to think about it more and get past this stigma of feeling like if I don't do something for this person right here, right now, then I'm a bad person for doing that, for turning them down, or maybe even once I walk away, it's like, why didn't I take the time to get more context for that situation, as it were? And so just being better informed and being more proactive with how to approach those situations. So.
Yeah, and that's one thing I'm trying to encourage everybody to do, including myself, is, you know, you can hear in Jason's descriptions, there's a proactiveness there. It's not just, oh, wait until something hits me, and then you're going to do probably something that's not very helpful, maybe even harmful.
One of the things that my parents' church does for situations like that, when people come up to them or they're on the side of the road or whatever, they put together these blessing bags, is what they call them. It's got a little snack in it, some socks, you know, some little things like that. But it also has, back when payphones were a little bit more popular, some money for a payphone and a card for one of the homeless shelters around town that would come and pick them up and take them to where they're going. So if you don't have the opportunity at the time to sit there and make that phone call, you're giving them resources that they can use to then help themselves in that way.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of a cool compromise, I guess. Yeah.
Well, that's again, any way you think through an approach to take is probably a any number of approaches that, but a thought out one is going to be better than a non thought one. And also the idea of keeping, let's keep all this in balance. We're still wanting to give it a chance. We got other things. We got to support our pastors. We got to support our church. We've got to think about missions. We got to think about our families. We're obviously supporting our family. So you're trying to balance all these things. It's just to take a bigger look and not just be so narrow in your focus. And that's what a lot of us tend to do, is become too narrow and we leave categories out. Like Jason said, it wasn't until recently, he's reading in Calvin's Institutes of all places. That's something written in the 1500s. he's reading through there, and Calvin's talking about the importance of helping the poor, and Jason's like, why don't I give to the poor? And that's what made him ask the question. That's what started the whole conversation, because he started asking me, what do you think about this? And I started telling him, and he came back, and then, it just kind of went on from there. This is you just heard about 10 minutes out of probably 4 or 5 hours or more of conversation, probably a lot more than that, between the two of us, if you add it all up. So it just give you an idea. Well, we're out of time, and hopefully we'll I'm going to look at some other categories next week. If anybody has something they want to throw in on the poor, next week at the beginning of class, we could probably do that. I'm not trying to stop conversation on it, but anyway, I hope it's been helpful to you. Father, thank you for this time, and thank you for this opportunity. Help us to be balanced, be proactive, and be honoring to you, and do all that's required of us, and do so joyfully. Do so in a way that does change our heart. And we know that ultimately you change our heart, but there are means sometimes that we can use, prayer and serving, that does, in fact, as Jason said, changes our heart. And we thank you. Give us those means and pray that we would use them to the full advantage to serve you. In Christ's name we pray, amen. You're dismissed.